Good evening, friends. I appreciate very much the sense of joy that I feel to be able to review with you some aspects of the foundation of happiness that Baha'u'llah has established for all the peoples and individuals and nations of the world. It is a profound subject in relation to the spiritual transformation of individuals and collective transformation, the ordering of nations, and the advancement of civilization. I feel that reflections on this subject strengthens understanding of the greatness of the cause and other teachings. The thrust of my remarks is related to Baha'u'llah's announcement. This is the day of great rejoicing. Rejoice with exceeding gladness, O people of Baha, as ye call to remembrance the day of supreme felicity. His revelation may be described as the era of the highest happiness achievable for mankind thus far in human history. His dispensation is the promised day of that gladness essential for the unification of mankind, the great day of joy. Indeed, a sign by which Baha'u'llah's revelation was to be known was this, according to Abdu'l-Bahá, that Baha'u'llah would be a joy bringer and the herald of the kingdom of happiness. Abdu'l-Bahá bore further witness that the revelation of Baha'u'llah is the foundation for happiness in this assertion. This is the age of the blessed perfection. If you do not smile now, for what time will you await? And what greater happiness could you expect? Doesn't everyone yearn deep down to be truly happy? Aren't there all kinds of happinesses, good and bad, according to orientations? Isn't there much in the world today to amuse, flatter, and gratify, a relentless pursuit of personal pleasures? Doesn't God desire exaltation for all? Isn't the false idea that humanity can be happy without religion growing in the world? These questions are best addressed by turning to the writings to learn what is true well-being and its source, particularly as the Baha'i scriptures provide such verses as, human life was created for happiness and not for sorrow. The Baha'i scriptures are a guide for real joyousness. Be happy, be full of joy, Abdu'l-Bahá commanded. He went on to say, the people must be so attracted to you that they will exclaim, what happiness exists among you, meaning the Baha'is, what happiness exist among you, and will see in your faces the light of the kingdom. Then, the Master says, then in wonderment they will turn to you and seek the cause of your happiness. So you see, we have a responsibility to know the cause, the foundation, the source, the basis of our happiness. I once heard that there was a believer who had been earnestly teaching his wife the faith for many, many years. One day she surprised him. "I have finally become a Baha'i." "What did you do that for?" the husband shouted. "Now I have to share the fast, the far sides, the deepening. Now I have to share all my Baha'i's activities with you." The husband didn't appreciate that the wife had found the true source of happiness. He had been so happy teaching her. This was his joy. When she became a believer, this made him unhappy. He relished, he adored the status quo. The starting point, then, is the position seen in the Baha'i writings that true individual and collective happiness is based on spirituality. That spirituality, the words of Abdu'l-Bahá, spirituality, that spiritual happiness is the true basis of the life of man. This means, I believe, that true happiness is contingent upon establishing and maintaining right relationships with God. Abdu'l-Bahá explained it in this way: happiness is a spiritual state. It is a supersensuous phenomenon. One cannot hear it with his ears or touch it with his hands. Man is in reality a spiritual being, and only when he lives in the spirit is he truly happy. The master also stated on another occasion, true happiness depends on spiritual good and having the heart ever open to receive the divine bounty. If the heart turns away from the blessings God offers, how can it hope for happiness? Finally, and this is the point I wish to emphasize, the master declared, Baha'u'llah has brought you divine happiness. Religion opens the door of unending happiness. To illustrate more fully that true happiness is contingent upon one's relationship to God, particularly the recognition of his manifestation, obedience to his laws and teachings, submission to his will and service, let's go back to the start of a new era of universal happiness. This revelation thrust upon me came as a thunderbolt, Mullah Hussein cried, following his acceptance of the declaration of the Bab. I was blinded by its dazzling splendor and overwhelmed by its crushing force. Excitement, joy, awe, and wonder stirred the depths of my soul. Predominantly among the emotions was a sense of gladness and strength which seemed to have transfigured me. Because Mullah Hussein was open to the promptings of the Holy Spirit, he attained to divine gladness with a new knowledge of God. His heart, like ours and Baha'is everywhere, was gladdened with certitude. He showed that true happiness resides in a spiritual order of things. One of the most important elements is enjoying the satisfaction that comes with the conscious realization of being created to know and love God. Like Mullah Hussein, Baha'is are happy because we share in the delights of faith. The Master said, true happiness and joy comes from composure of the heart, and this comes from faith. Praise be to God for giving us this repose of the heart. It is because of this that we are always happy. I would like to mention that as this is the great day of universal joy for all mankind, the writings indicate that the nations of the world will also find the source of their true happiness in the revelation of Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah has summoned the nations to his foundation of supreme felicity. This is one of the most distinguishing features of the revelation, in my view. Some time ago, it was generally agreed that securing the greatest amount of happiness for the largest number of its citizens was the purpose of government. This utilitarian theory of happiness for the greatest number was ill-founded. Still, the political view was correct, that happiness derives from virtue, and that form of government with virtue as its foundation was more likely than any other to promote the general happiness. Baha'u'llah has prescribed that governments must be just in securing the contentment of all its citizens. On this position, Mirza Abu Fazl, the great Baha'i scholar, wrote, justice is the strongest foundation for the happiness of countries, the longevity of states, and the power and authority of governments. Abdu'l-Bahá told the story of the king who once gave his minister a few days to tell him what God eats, what God wears, and what his job is. The minister was greatly perplexed. He went home and told his servant, and the servant said, I know the answers. The servant responded, the answer to the first question is that God eats all the sadness of his servants. The second answer is that God covers himself with the sins of his servants. The answer to the third question, what is the work of God? The servant says, I will tell you the answer to this question on the day of the king's prize-giving ceremony. And so it was, the minister, he rushed back to the king and he says, I know the answers to your question. And he told the king the two answers his servant had given him. And the king, being a wise king, he said, these are not your answers. And the minister confessed, no, these are the answers that I received from the servant. The king said, well, in that case, your servant should be the minister, and you should be the servant. And so on the day when the former servant was now made the minister, the former servant said to the former boss, now I can give you the answer to the third question. What is the job of God? The work of God is this. He takes from one and gives to another. In his tablets to the kings, Baha'u'llah enjoined them, and I think it's quite significant, Baha'u'llah enjoins the kings to abandon all discreditable practices and conventions which are detrimental to the happiness of the human race. And these practices and conventions that the nations are perpetuating, all of these must be continued detrimental to the human race, and the policies and practices of the nations must and will come into alignment eventually with the teachings for a new age. It is fascinating to note the loving manner in which Baha'u'llah bids the rulers to accept the faith, to teach his cause, and embark on the path of individual and collective spiritual development. I feel that mankind will come to rejoice that through the infusion of divine power, all nations and peoples will become quickened and universal happiness will be achieved. It is important to consider as well that the summons of nations to true joyousness reflects the emotions important to the principle of the wonders of humanity and the spiritual foundation of the divine civilization Baha'u'llah has inspired. For example, Abdu'l-Bahá wrote, "True civilization will unfurl its banner in the midmost heart of the world whenever a certain number of its sovereigns shall for the good and happiness of all mankind arise with firm resolve and clear vision to establish the cause of universal peace." Another dimension of the subject I feel important to mention is the position established in the writings that true gladness does not result from the pursuit of or focus on happiness itself, but from spiritual activities and pursuits. Joy is a wonderful byproduct of submission to the will of God, which means virtuous living, spiritual behavior, the pursuit of activities and services prescribed by the manifestation of God. In other words, happiness is derivative. The writings make it plain that to pursue real and true happiness means doing those things ordained by God. For example, the Master said, "True happiness is founded upon spiritual behavior. Striving to make others happy, service to the cause, obedience to his laws, endeavoring for the improvement of mankind are crucial elements," I think. Aiming to accomplish something else, we achieve happiness by the way. Here are a few gems from the writings. "Happy is the man that hath heard our voice and answered our call. Happy is the man who will arise to serve my cause and glorify my beauteous name, take hold of my book, and cleave tenaciously to whatsoever commandments thy Lord hath prescribed therein. Happy is the man that pondereth in his heart that which hath been revealed in the books of God. Happy is he that ariseth to promote the best interests of the peoples and kindreds of the earth. Happy is the man who hath attained to justice and equity. Happy are they who in the days of world encompassing trials have stood fast in the cause and refused to swerve from its truth." The functionality of happiness, then, is shown in its being achievable by spiritual strivings, and particularly, it seems to me, in teaching the cause. Let me end this section with this penetrating verse from The Secret of Divine Civilization. Man's real happiness lies in self-respect, in high resolve and noble purposes, in integrity and moral qualities, in immaculacy of mind. Speaking of high resolution, you may enjoy as much as I do that short little prayer that begins, "O God, refresh and gladden my spirit." You know that prayer? A very sweet little prayer. There is the beginning supplication for assistance. And then the verses that follow, extolling the exercise of will if you want to be happy. "I will be a happy and joyful being." You remember those verses? "No longer full of anxiety. Trouble won't harass me. I won't dwell on the unpleasant things of life." This indicates that will and action and prayers are powerful means for maintaining the spiritual foundation of happiness. The mention of will and eternal joy brings to mind the holy verse from Baha'u'llah, "I have made death a messenger of joy." The stages of happiness goes on and on. In this connection, there was once a wealthy man, and he was dying, so he motioned to his wife to come nearer to his bedside. He informed her that he had neglected to make a will. In a weak voice, he asked her to listen carefully to what he said. "I'm leaving the business to our first son." "You're making a big mistake," protested the wife tearfully. "That boy only thinks of gambling. Leave it to the second son." "Let it be the second son then," the dying man sighed. "Our summer home, I leave it to our first daughter." "What does she need our summer home for?" the wife objected. "Her husband is rich. It would be better if you gave it to our youngest girl, who is very poor." "Very well," sighed the poor dying husband. "Let the second girl have it. Now, as for the car, I leave that to our first son." "The first son," the wife said in surprise, "what does he need a car for? Hasn't he got a car? Believe me, my brother John could make better use of it." With a look of aspiration in the dying man's face, collecting his ebbing strength, he cried, "Who wants to be happy dying here? me or you?" I have the impression that when we are in a state and condition of spiritual happiness, we are kinder, fairer, more loving, more active, more humble. We come now to the other side of the emotion, unhappiness. I have a proposition I like to try out on you. It's this: happy Baha'is are all alike. Every unhappy Baha'i is unhappy in his or her own way. If you recall, you have read something like this before, you are absolutely right. Just make a few changes and you have the famous first sentence of Tolstoy's great novel, Anna Karenina. "Happy families are alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in his own way. You may know the story of the jeweler who loved pearls. He loves to look at pearls and to touch pearls and adore him. And he told this story. There was a time when I lost my way in the desert, and I wandered about many days. All my food and water was gone. I thought I would die. Then I found a bag of pearls. I shall never forget my joy when I thought the bag was full of roasted wheat, nor my unhappiness when I saw it was pearls. Of course, happy Baha'is are not all happy alike. Each believer can tell his or her story how they are pleased. The foundation or basis is one and the same. Still, some are perfectly blissful, holding attitudes and pursuing activities entirely inconsistent with the teachings. A host of unhappinesses manifesting spiritual confusion or immaturity could be mentioned. But I feel that the loving mercy of God and his protection, and in most instances, the sincerity in which we and Baha'is all over the world are acting and responding are always important to bear in mind as we grow spiritually in advancing the divine test. Regarding test and unhappiness, we know that God tests according to capacity. I must tell you that I share the sentiments of the late Mother Teresa, who said of her recurring tests and God's knowledge of her capacity to bear them, that she wished that God didn't have so much confidence in her. Speaking of tests, the master said, anyone can be happy in the state of comfort, ease, health, success, pleasure, and joy. But if one will be happy and contented in the time of trouble, hardship, and prevailing disease, it is the proof of nobility. Once there was a believer who was a guest of the master in Haifa. She was very unhappy, really depressed by her feelings of unworthiness and faults. The master frequently said to her, "Be happy." She began to wonder why he always addressed her in this way more than he did others. Finally, she asked him why he urged her to be happy. The master replied, "I tell you to be happy because we cannot know the spiritual life unless we are happy." The believer exclaimed, "But tell me, what is the spiritual life? I have heard ever since I was born about the spiritual life, and no one could ever explain it to me. What is it all about?" Abdu'l-Bahá said, "Characterize thyself with the characteristics of God, and thou shalt know the spiritual life." She started reflecting on the divine characteristics, love, generosity, sincerity, trustworthiness, justice, and others. She became happy. At last, she began to understand. If she was absorbed in heavenly ideals, they would translate themselves into deeds, and her days and nights would be full of light. She identified, understood, and resolutely dealt with her peculiar unhappinesses in the same way that you and I are considering and dealing with whatever unhappinesses we have that are peculiar to us. This shows in my mind that the ideal conditions for happiness are those that assist to know and to love God and to serve the Almighty. Often the question arises as to the effect of the pursuits of material objects. As you know, many define their success and happiness by the money they make, the position they hold. Still, they cannot find an inner identity of values that is impervious to the conditions that make them sad and depressed. The Baha'i perspective is that material acquisitions and involvement in the life of the world are permissible. Moderation and detachment are elements of the spiritual foundation. Living for the world alone will not achieve divine happiness, neither will amassing wealth or power. Baha'u'llah revealed, it behooveth the people of Baha to die to the world, to be so detached from all earthly things that all the peoples of the earth may recognize in their faces the brightness of the All-Merciful. I find the following words of the Master also helpful. Enjoy pleasant things, look with pleasure upon beautiful things, but without clinging to them, without holding them dearer than God. The flesh, the senses, the emotions are the instruments by which we attain to the understanding of truth. But they must be kept as instruments and not be allowed to become our masters. Unless sense indulgence is held in check, progress towards God is quite out of the question. Be calm, be joyous, not only when the sky is clear, but when clouds gather as well. In Paris, a believer asked the Master if he decreased his material possessions, would his spirituality increase? The Master replied, detachment is not the lack of material means, but it is the absence of the heart's attachment to and reliance upon them. Detachment is the freedom of heart and not the lack of means. Here are some other pertinent statements in the writings. One who is imprisoned by desires is always unhappy. Seek for spiritual joy and enlightenment. Spiritual civilization has been extended. The divine civilization must now be promulgated. Until the two agree, real happiness among mankind will be unknown. And if material happiness and spiritual felicity be conjoined, it will be delight upon delight. Although desires for power, position, and wealth are not the source of true felicity, I want to read you some popular expressions which indicate that they may be around for some time. The first is this, just one of the popular expressions. Whosoever said money can't buy happiness didn't know where to shop. Another is this statement. Money can't buy happiness. It can, however, rent it. Another is, money can't buy you happiness, but it does bring you a more pleasant form of misery. And the last is the confession someone once made. All I ask is a chance to prove that money can't make me happy. Now, regarding the functionality and power of happiness, on another occasion, the master explained, joy gives us wings. In times of joy, our strength is more vital, our intellect keener, and our understanding less cloudy. We seem better able to cope with the world, find our sphere of usefulness. But when sadness visits us, we become weak. Our strength leaves us, our comprehension is dim, and our intelligence veiled. And we become even as dead beings. All the sorrow and the grief that exist come from the world of matter. The spiritual world bestows only the joy. A man living with his thoughts in this kingdom knows perpetual joy. Ills do not pass him by, but they only touch the surface of his life. The depths are calm and serene. Two important subsets of happiness that I would like to briefly touch upon are humor and laughter. The Baha'i writings show that humor and laughter have an especially important place in daily life. For example, Abdu'l-Bahá said to some believers, may everyone point to you and ask, why are these people so happy? I want you to be happy, to laugh, to smile, and rejoice in order that others may be happy by you. I think the subject is so important that the master went on in another setting to explain. And here's the words of the master that I read. Laughter is caused, Abdu'l-Bahá explained, by the slackening or relaxation of the nerves. It is an ideal condition and not physical. Laughter is the physical effect of an invisible cause. For example, happiness and misery are supersensuous phenomena. One cannot hear them with his ears or touch them with his hands. Happiness is a spiritual state. In a quotation of the master. Now the scientists say that even a giggle can decrease stress and help alleviate depression, lower blood pressure, and the scientists are finding all kinds of benefits to prove the old saying that laughter is the best medicine. The master said that you must always be happy. You must associate with joyous and happy people and be adorned with divine morals. All of us know the sadness that occurs to be around complaining people and those who are always backbiting and finding fault. The master says you must always be around, you must associate with joyous and happy people. Happiness has a direct influence, the words of the master, happiness has a direct influence in preserving our health while being upset causes illness. Physical happiness is subject to a thousand changes and vicissitudes. I find humor and laughter particularly meaningful to the exhilaration and spiritual development of mankind in light of the prophecy, Jewish prophecy in the Old Testament, in light of the prophecy that in the Messianic era, our mouths will be filled with laughter. In other words, I take it that this is a prophecy that with the advent of Baha'u'llah, the mouths of you and I and all the peoples of the world will be filled with laughter, the happiness and the signs of happiness. It is reliably recorded that Baha'u'llah made amusing remarks and held humorous conversations occasionally with his companions. This put them at ease. It is this happy, humorous lightness in the Baha'i communities that many find charming. You know how breathtakingly serious are the laws and teachings. But there is that air of early in the morning joy about us which invigorates many communities. You may recall that even when Baha'u'llah and his companions were imprisoned in the barracks at Akka, the believers told each other funny stories and made jests of every little incident. There is the account that the prison guards were surprised that here were the prisoners, and they were happy and filled with laughter and joy. Once when Abdu'l-Bahá was with some believers in America, he began to laugh. And he laughed and laughed and laughed to himself. "I'm going to tell you something funny," he said, adding in English a joke. "Oh, tell it," they begged. Laughing to himself, the master said, "No, not now," he responded. Walking up and down, he laughed and laughed again. And he said, "I am thinking of my joke." "Tell it," they pleaded. "No, I cannot," the master said. "For every time I try to tell it, I laugh. So I cannot speak." And the poor believers, they never did hear the joke. Now the world has finally caught up with the divine counsel that everyone should smile, laugh, and rejoice more. All over the world, people are learning professional courses how to laugh. There are laughing schools, laughing classes, laughing festivals, laughing therapy groups abound. These abound in all parts of the world. They are teaching people how to laugh and how to apply the healing medicine of laughter. A word of caution seems appropriate. Even with humor, laughter, jokes, smiles, moderation, and other spiritual qualities are required. Like the master showed, we should avoid joking and laughing too much. The humor should not go so far as to insult or anger others. Despite the master's penchant for humor and laughter, no one could be with him without the feeling of utmost respect. No one felt they could impose on his dignity and station. And now to close, At heart, your cheerful faces, bright smiles, and rich laughter, and that of Baha'is everywhere, are signs of adherence to the divine command to live in the utmost happiness. As it is stated in the writings, we should all be very happy. The words of Abdu'l-Bahá, we should all be very happy and thankful to God for the great privilege that is ours. One important aspect of the foundation to note for your possible reflections is that happiness is characterized in the Baha'i writings as spiritual happiness, true happiness, real happiness, divine happiness. You see this distinction that the Baha'i writing makes in relationship to the other kinds of happiness. Divine happiness, real happiness, eternal happiness, highest happiness, great, supreme, unending, universal, and other divine descriptions of happiness, I think, to make us to appreciate what it is that we have. I'd like to tell you one last story of a personal example that I saw of an amazing kind of happiness. It happened just before I relocated to the Baha'i World Center from Africa. I went to the National Spiritual, the National Center in the Lagos, Nigeria, and there was a nun sitting there waiting for someone to help her. And I went to her and I introduced myself to her, and she embraced me very, very warmly. And I was very curious about that, and she had such a bright and happy smile on her face. She went on to introduce herself to me, and she said that she was Nigerian, and she had accepted the Baha'i faith. She had registered as a Baha'i in the country that she was living. I thought that I maybe should sit with her and have a real serious discussion with her. She was dressed as a nun, as I said. And I didn't know that if she was having some confusion, that maybe she could be a Catholic nun and a Baha'i at the same time. And she must have seen the shock on my face, so she went on to explain that she had arrived in Lagos that morning and that she was on her way to the home of her family so that she could tell mother and father. And she said she would also go to the convent where she had become a nun to tell the sisters there. And she said that she was on her way to tell mother and father that she had accepted the faith of the Father, Baha'u'llah. She had accepted the faith of the Father that the Son, Jesus, had promised would come. And she explained that she thought it would be it would assist her parents to accept the news that she was no longer a Catholic nun but had become a Baha'i, if they would see her dressed in the same way that she was when she left. And she went on to explain that this is why she was dressed in the habit of the nun, and she had come to the Baha'i Center in Lagos to get some Baha'i literature so that she could explain to her parents. And she was very kind and thoughtful. I came to the Baha'i World Center, and about 6 weeks later, I got a lovely letter from her. and she sent a photograph. She was dressed in a very flowing African gown and smiling from ear to ear. And she said that the parents appreciated the way that she had come to them, dressed in the way that they had last seen her, so that she could explain. You see the point, wisdom and kindness and thinking. Our expression of satisfaction, of deep and intense joy, manifests that our rejoicing has a firm foundation, that the chances and changes of the world cannot diminish the strength of its source. We are a happy religious people, letting the revelation penetrate our veins and arteries, hearts, minds, and souls, not in the form of a temporary flash, but as a force imbuing our very beings, giving us the gift of a great real happiness that endures, that really satisfies. Maybe this is why we are even unconsciously radiating joy. Perhaps like the fish is oblivious of water because it is always immersed in it. Certainly, there are moments of sadness, tests, and the like. But the foundation of striving ever for spiritual behavior and understanding is not shaken. We brim with inner spiritual joy, rooted in our love for Baha'u'llah, and aren't our smiles and laughter and services proof that when you are in love, it shows. As you are aware, in the Tablet of Carmel, Baha'u'llah has a conversation with the Holy Mountain, and it tells him how happy and blissful it is that Baha'u'llah has come. And so here we are on the mountain of God, associating with one another with great joy, proud to have the privilege of serving the divine plan in this sacred location where Baha'u'llah wrote. It is here on Mount Carmel that the tabernacle of glory hath been raised. Happy are they that attain thereunto. Happy are they that set their faces towards it. Thank you.